Good to be with everyone again. It's been a little bit of hiatus between change of travel plans and Perm and the like. Hopefully you saw the email with the asynchronous share that I both uploaded it to Waiutora as an audio, and I also gave the video recording of just my screen. But I wanted to kind of finish that up. Joy. I wanted to finish that up so that way we could move to volume five this week. And as you can see in volume five, there's more things that are particularly related to Pesach, including the laws of kashering and some of the principles behind that. And then the last shiur in the volume also has halachas of bedikas, bittul, and bir chametz. So I'd like to do that. I think this shiur on hechsher kelim on kashering, I'm going to split into two parts because it's a lot to cover in 1 week. And then we'll finish up next week. So before we dive into this, we're on page 213 in volume five. For those who have, if you didn't get volume five yet, it's in the office. If you asked for one, didn't get it yet, it's in the office waiting for you. Before we even get into the Mishnah that's brought on the first page here, I think it's actually important for us to see a pasuk. I just lost it because not that one. Okay, so when towards the end of Moshe Rabbeinu's life, the very last thing he's commanded to do before he gives his final speech, and he dies on Har Nevo. And so the last thing he's commanded to do is to fight the Midianim. And in this war, so there was an assumption that people were going to take the spoils, including utensils that could be used for food preparation, cooking, and the like. So the Torah tells us, "Kol davar asher yavo ba'esh, taviru ba'esh." Anything placed of these materials on a fire, you must pass through fire, v'taher, and then becomes purified. Ach b'mei nida yitchata. However, it must be purified with sprinkling water. Anything that was not placed on the fire, you may pass through water. So basically what we have here is this is the pasuk that forms the basis for the idea, first of all, of kashering utensils that are required from a non-Jew. And we'll talk about the different steps there momentarily. But Rashi already gives us on this pasuk, Rashi gives us a sense of what's going on here. He says, "Tavir ba'esh." We now have it in English. It's not in the book. I'm reading away from Safari. I don't know, but I thought it was important, so I thought we should. So they reference it at some point. Okay, fine. So Rashi says, "Kederch tashmisho hagalaso." The manner in which it's used is a manner in which it has to be cleansed. So if you have a vessel that's used in hot water, it should be dunked in hot water. If you, let's say you roast something, you have a spit or a grill, no but worse. Then you have to make it white hot in the flame. To summarize this principle, it's kivolo kach polto. So as the vessel absorbs, that's how it has to be. That's how it has to be koshered in order to get rid of the non-kosher taste. Again, the basis of koshering utensils, not just if you mix something up, but if you acquire something from a non-Jew, so it has to be koshered in this fashion. So with that said, let's look at the Mishnah on page 213. Before that, they give us a little bit of an introduction on hechsher kelim. On kashering, 213. Give us a.
Don't you mean 215?
Really?
215.
So I have a different version, I guess, than you do. Okay. That's going to be confusing. Okay, well, I'll give you the source numbers also so that will help. So again, so kashering comes up in a number of occasions. Number one, if you, what we call, trafe something up, use a dairy utensil with a meat dish, etc. Or if you're koshering a non-kosher kitchen altogether, so to give an example, let's say if you're staying in an Airbnb and you want to use and can be there for a little while, you want to use their stuff. So it's a kashering process. And then also for Pesach, there's a kashering. We use the kashering process as well. We'll compare a little bit things that are relevant to the rest of the year to Pesach. So the Mishnah.
The kashering process is only for hot.
What?
If something is hot, you have to kasher it. There's no kashering with cold water.
Correct. Okay. So we'll discuss that. I believe we'll discuss that in one moment. So the Mishnah of Avodah Zarah says, Avodah Zarah says, okay, kli tashmish min ha'ov de kochavim. Somebody who purchases a utensil from a non-Jew, Esher Darko Lahatbil Yatbil. So that which is a manner which is meant to be immersed and doesn't require any more preparation, so then it has to be tovelt. Lahagil Yagil. So if it needs to be purged with boiling water, so then you have to purge it with boiling water. The Labin Ba'ur, if you make something on the fire, so Yilabin Ba'ur, so then you have to heat it until it's white hot in the fire. Hashput v'askala, Milabnan Ba'ur Hasakin, Ba'ur. And then if you have a spit or a grill, you heat them until they are white hot in the fire. And then Hasakin, when it comes to a knife, Shafa, you must polish it, V'hitahar, it's considered pure. So this Mishnah sort of codifies the pasuk that I talked about, that if you use a utensil for cooking and it's used with boiling water, so then you have to kasher with boiling water. If it goes directly on a fire, it has to be kasher by fire. So,
there's a between something that's packaged you never use and something that's used. It seems we're assuming
momentarily. So first of all, before we go any further, they give us the outline here on the next page before source 2. I think that's page 216 for you guys. So there's different. There are different versions of kashering. So the strongest version of kashering is what we call libun chamor. That's when you place something in a very high temperature. So for example, when people use the self cleaning function in their oven to kasher the oven for Pesach, that's libun chamor. Right? That's a very high temperature level of kashering. It's a very intense level of heat. Libun kal is when you place something in a fire in a somewhat lower temperature. We'll define that in a little bit. So then you have hag'ala in a kli rishon. Hag'ala is when you place something in boiling water. So there's hag'ala when you place it sort of in a pot of boiling water that's on the stove, that's on the fire. And then there's irui in a kli rishon, pouring boiling hot water on it. So let's say I have a mug that's made of metal, right? And let's say it becomes treif, or I want to kasher for whatever reason. So usually you're pouring, the way you're using it is that you're pouring water from an urn or the like into the cups. Therefore, to kasher it, you would also pour boiling hot water on it. Then there's also the idea of hagala and klisheni, that you place something in water that was boiled on fire, but it's been taken off the fire. So these are offer different options for how we can kasher something. And the question is, depending on the utensil and its use, so which one of these do we use for which? The Gemara in Pesachim tells us, Amar Funa Breder of Yeshua, it's paror, mag'ilo berotkin l'chli rishon. So if you have a wooden ladle that absorbed the flavor of chametz from a pot of boiling water, which was on the fire, so it has to be purged. It has to be cleaned in boiling water in a kli rishon that's on the fire, right? Since the ladle was used on the stove with boiling water, so then it needs to be put into a pot of boiling water on the stove. So the Gemara says kasavar kivolo kachpoto. So he holds that as it absorbs, so it emits or expels. Right, just so the kashering process has to mirror the way the product is used. So I guess a little bit more clarification. Let's look at the Gemara and Avodah Zarah, source 3. This will address, I think, a couple of things that Herb has already raised. So Tanur Rabbanan, Alkech Kli Tashmish Min Ha'ov De Kochavim. Someone acquires a utensil from an non-Jew. The Dvarim Shelo Nishtamish Bahem. So if it's never been used before, so let's say they made it, it's made in China, but it's never, but it's in the package, it's never been used. But be laundry hand torin. So it's enough to just bring it to the mikvah and you're done. Don't have to do anything more. Correct. Yeah, no. When you buy buy a glass from the store, you put it in the mikvah, that's it. Why do we do it all together? Because that's the gzera from the pasuk that anything that's acquired from a non-Jew has to go through some sort of purification process, right? But it's never been used, so you don't have to do anything more than that. If it was used just in a cold state, kagon kosos, kantonios, vitzochios, so you have let's say cups and flasks and. Right, so madicha matbilan behin tohorin. So then, in order to kasher it, so you have to rinse it, you put it in the mikvah, and then that's and then it can be used by a Jew. Varim shenishamish behin al yedei chamin. So then, if you use it in hot water, kigon hayoros kum kamusan umechame chamin. So you have pots and kettles that are that again you cook on the stove. So Magilan matbilan v'hein tohorin. So you have to put it through boiling water, and then you put it in the mikvah, and then it's acceptable. Dvarish nishtamish b'hein ayde ha'or. Anything that's used on fire, kagon shiputim v'ha'as kolalos melabnan matbilan v'hein tohorin. So then you have to put them in a white hot fire, and then they become pure. So these are.
Can I ask a question?
So again, this is. In this case, we're talking about you acquired it from a non-Jew. So that's why you have to take the extra step to put it in the mikvah, right? As opposed to like when you just, make something treif, so then you don't necessarily have to put it in the mikvah because, but here you acquired it from a non-Jew, so you need to go in the mikvah. Yeah, Tony.
What if the pot is extremely large and you don't have anything to put it in? Are you stuck?
So I don't know if this will, I haven't looked at the whole Shir, I think, imagine at some point they'll explain that if it's that big, so what you would do is you would put, let's say if you have a relatively small pot, so the idea would be to put it in a bigger pot. But the biggest pot you have is not going to fit in anything. So then you fill the water to the brim, you put a hot stone in that pot, and then that kashrus it.
And are you going to address the handles and things like attachments on the pot? Is that going to be coming up in the discussion? Like,
I don't know for sure at this point. If
okay.
It doesn't, then I will address it either next week, or I'll, I can address it also for Pesach purposes. I can address it on Shabbos as well.
Since we talk about handles outside the pot, it's just because food might have gotten. We don't cook on a handle or an outside.
Yeah, we don't cook on a handle, but.
But food could spill on it.
Yeah, you can also be like washing it in your pesadika sink. And so what about the outside too?
Like, all right, so we can address these things. But the next thing, so far what we've said, let's say I have a spoon that needs to be kashered. So let's say for all intents and purposes, I use that spoon inside a pot of boiling water on the stove. So then clearly I have to do hagala. I have to put it in the pot of boiling water. But what happens, let's say I use a spoon for multiple purposes, including most of the time I use a spoon to have soup, which is not putting the soup, the spoon into the pot of soup. I'm putting the spoon into the bowl after it's already been transferred. So what happens if I maybe use that spoon in a variety of ways? So which way is the proper way of kashering it? So the Rashba says in source form, in Tshuva, the Rashba was one of the Rishonim, one of the early Spanish commentators. He was a student of the Ramban. So he says, Sholachu behakshar hakelim elachar ikar tashmishan. Ikar tashmishan has to be the primary way that you use it. So if you need to figure out how you kasher a particular utensil, so you figure out what you mostly use it for, and even if every now and then use it for something else, so that's considered irrelevant, according to the Rashba. However, the Beit Yosef quotes some of the Balei HaTosfot, in particular the Rav Yah, one of the German Balei HaTosfot, says, Afa Pisha Rov Tashmisham Bakhlisheni. So let's say, like the spoon, let's say most of the time I use it in a klisheni, I use it, you know, it's hot, but it's secondary. But I have to be concerned that maybe there are a few occasions where I would put it into a pot that's on the fire. So then I have to be concerned about that. So then I would have to, you know, then I would have to, I'd have to do hagala on the fire as opposed to off the fire. So how do we pass on this one? So Shulchan Aruch says, and this is, of course, Rav Yosef Karo, the Mechaber, coming from the Sephardi perspective. He says, Kol kli hochin bo achai rov tashmisho. It has to be based on the majority usage of that utensil. So when it comes to, let's say, bowls, so, okay, so maybe or a pot. So, let's say we're talking about bowls. So maybe once in a while, let's say a metal bowl goes on the fire, but most of the time I only use it as sort of a secondary utensil. So then I go accordingly. The Rama, however, says v'yish machmirin lehagil kol kli shtia afal pisha tashmishan betzonin mishum shalifamim mishamshim behem bechamin. So let's say you have glasses. So glasses, for the most part, use a glass for cold drinks. But maybe there are some times where I put hot drink in the glass. So therefore, he says that some people are machmir to do hagala on glasses. That's the custom. Now, if in theory, if you, as long as you washed it, it's really sufficient. But some people would say you should do hagala on cups, so that and for the potential scenario where you use it for hot, and therefore you need to kasher that way. And what in a becher? I can't think about why. Oh, I guess for Pesach you. So for Pesach, I think the minhag is that we clean it out. I don't remember. Okay, right. So Mishnah Berurah tells us that, you know, generally we should do. You know, we rely on the first opinion that that we should be concerned for, you know, whatever the most strict process is that's relevant should be used for a particular utensil. He says that
to differentiate between hagol and everything for cleaning out the stuff and just the ritual purposes.
Meaning what?
The stuff doesn't take off. You're taking off the chametz or whatever you're taking off. You're not saying this one will work with burning, this one will work with boiling. It's not the
technique. Step one is that you have to clean it well.
Well,
okay, but once you've cleaned it well, right? So no, but the assumption that that the Torah makes is that something that's used on the fire, so it's more likely to expel the taste if you kosher it on the fire. So we are kind of making a really a statement. Okay, so now we've got go ahead. Yeah.
But I think. Also, since you have to not use objects for like 24 hours before doing any of this.
Yeah, right. So
is that true?
Because then at that point also you have the extra leniency of Eino Ben Yomo. So that also, that if it hasn't been used for 24 hours, so that makes things a lot better. Okay, so now we've laid out some general principles. So let's go into different ways of kashering. So the most intense way of kashering something is through libun, by putting something directly in the fire. Okay, so the question becomes, so how hot does this fire have to be? So we have two opinions that may or may not be in agreement with each other. So the Talmud Yerushalmi says in Avodah Zarah, verse 9, libun zarich shiyu nitzotzos menat zimimena. It has sparks that are raised from it. Okay, so again, it's intense, but not as intense as it could be, because Talmud Bavli in Maseches Avodah Zarah says, in the name of Rav Mani, achetasher klipasan, until they shed their outer layer. Right, so the fire is so intense. Excuse me. That there's a layer of the utensil that's being shed in the process. That's obviously a very strong way of putting something in the fire. So that becomes the issue of potentially ruining something is a big issue, because that's why in many China is not kosher in many cases, because people are concerned that they're going to ruin the China, and therefore they're not going to do a good enough job. So that's where the minhag not to kosher China comes from. But fine. So the Beis Yosef says that that these things in the name of the Rush, that these things are actually related, that idea of sparks coming from it, and that they, you know, shed their outer layer, that's all sort of the same idea. However, on in source 12, assume is page 220 for you. Hope I'm getting this right. Must have been some page that was added in to your edition. That's not mine. So I did get these a year or two ago. So Agos Maimonides quotes a Rav Avigdor Katz that sheim alavno ad sheim yasim alav kash yehu nitzotzos nitzim imanu sagi behachi. So the first opinion, the Yerushalmi, is talking about a case. Let's say you put a piece of, let's say you were to take the fire, and you were to have it come in contact with straw, and then the straw is catching fire and the sparks. So that's one level of libun. And then there's the other level of libun, where you're to the point where you could shed the outer layer, as we said. And he does raise a concern that in some cases, if you did the stricter version of libun, so you would ruin the utensils. So Mordechai comes and says, Mordechai was a contemporary of the Rush in the 13th century. I actually have a bio on here. An interesting story of him having to flee persecution.
That's his name on the banner?
Yeah, Rabbi Mordechai ben Hillel Cohen. But he's often just known as the Mordechai. He's known as the Mordechai. In Israel, they call him the Mordechai. I don't know why. It doesn't make sense to me. Okay, so Mordechai says, So some put a straw as sort of a test to see if the straw would burn, then that's sufficient for what we call libun. That means that the libun is taking place from one side to the other, even if the outer layer does not come up. But what we have essentially going on here is two forms of libun. We call one version libun kal and one libun chamor. Libun kal is the lighter version of using fire, in which you only have to ensure that, let's say, a piece of straw would burn. Libun chamor is when it's a much higher temperature, to the point where the outer layer of the utensil could come off. So when do you use which one? So the Mordechai suggests that when we're dealing with issues where something is heter abala, that the utensil absorbs something that was technically permitted. So in that case, in theory, even hagala, even boiling in hot water would be enough. So certainly libun kal. Certainly, libun kal would be fine. So, an example of that would be chametz, because when it comes to chametz in Pesach, so the chametz originally was permitted substance, becomes forbidden at a later point. Well, when you're kashering it, it's permitted substance. So, in that case, libun kal does the job in many of these cases. Versus, if you're dealing with let's say bona fide non kosher, it's chazer, whatnot. So then you would need libun chamor. So Shulchan Aruch Paskins, source 14, kingdom shemishtam shebahem aideha, or vessels that are used on the fire, kikon shiputim vaskalos, v'chayotze bahem, tzrichim libun. They require libun, v'libun hu achihu nitzotzos nitzimim. And libun is when the sparks are raised from him to the point where the upper layer, outer layer, is removed, says the Mishnah Berurah. Okay, so then the Ramah adds, "Veish mekilim nizla ben kol kach shekas nish kash disraf alav bibachutz." So those who are lenient that that if their straw, if the straw would burn on it from the outside, so that's good enough for libun. So Ramah is endorsing the concept of libun kal. Shulchan Aruch does not really raise libun kal. However, v'noagim kisvar rishona b'chol davar shadino b'libun. But anything that would really require libun really should be done with libun chamor. Libun kal could be used in cases where there are opportunities to be lenient. So, for example, libun kal, he says, could be used with chametz because when you're kashering it, it's really a permitted substance. So, therefore, we're lenient for libun kal. But for other cases of, let's say again, there's chazer involved, so then you would have to use libun chamor. But the Ramah says, by the way, it's important to note this: we have hilchos kasher, so a lot of it comes up, especially with vessels. A lot of it comes up in Yeridea in the section related to kashrus, but some of it also some hilchos kasher appears in hilchos Pesach. So here we're actually talking it's Or HaChaim. We're talking about Pesach here. So the Ramah says that really we should follow the opinion of libun chamor. We should follow the first opinion that you should do libun chamor. So why should you use libun chamor to kasher something that requires fire for Pesach? Because there are some opinions that hold that that chametz is technically a forbidden substance because it's forbidden on Yom Tov. So he goes on to say that if you don't have a way to do libun chamor and doing so would prevent one from being able to enjoy Yom Tov or the like, and it hasn't been used within 24 hours for chametz, so then one could do libun kal, in some case even hagala. But ideally, things that are on the fire that require kashering should be done with libun chamor, according to the Shulchan Aruch, as far as Pesach goes. Okay, so the next thing that is brought here is when we talk about kibolo kach polto, so we said that the way it absorbs is a way that it's going to expel taste. So within the concept of libun, within the concept of putting something in the fire, so do we say that the libun has to be done at the temperature that the utensil was used at, or are we just saying that if you use utensil by fire, it has to be the form of libun, but the temperature that it was used in is irrelevant. So in Piskei Tshuvot, it says, read this in English for the sake of time, this is a source 16, if the usage of the utensils is not in a manner that raises sparks, nevertheless, one must perform libun in the manner that raises sparks from it, since the rule of kibol kach polto refers only to hagala. It was not mentioned at all concerning libun, since libun does not expel the prohibited flavor, but rather it burns it, right? So we're saying generally that a kashering maybe, gets rid of the flavor, but here we're saying it's libun does something else. It burns it. So that's a different process. So therefore, if something requires libun, it requires libun. It's irrelevant what the temperature was when it was on the fire. But then he goes on to say, but there are some poskim who hold that the rule of kibol kach polto does apply to libun, and therefore, if its usage and the prohibited flavor entering the utensil occurred through the heat of fire that is not at the level that raises sparks from it, so too the limun does not need to be in the manner that raises sparks from it. But in practice, one should not be leading like this opinion unless there are additional considerations. Okay? For example, if you let's say, well, I only use this utensil at 115 degrees, but that's not the level of limun. So libun is going to be much hotter than that. So that has to be taken into consideration. Okay, what about libun for utensils that might be ruined? So Shulchan Aruch says, well, again, this is relevant sometimes to consideration of China. Yesh bish omer de kapos hasudios bikeren, source 17. Spoons that are made out of a horn, from a horn, cannot be rectified through kashering through agala. So So you can't. So in theory, the spoons made out of horn should be put done through a gala, should be put in boiling water. But since we're concerned that it will get ruined to boiling water, so we don't kosher it at all, because perhaps somebody won't even kosher it. Perhaps someone won't kosher it sufficiently. So it's better not to kosher it at all than to kosher it insufficiently to think you did it right. So in source 18, Moshe Feinstein applies this to porcelain, that that in theory porcelain, let's say if you use porcelain like, you know, in an oven, so libun can't maybe shouldn't be done on them because the coating will become ruined, and we're concerned that the person won't perform the libun properly. Rav Eliezer Belabit brings up the same thing in terms of like aluminum pans, wonder pots, similar considerations. So that's some considerations with libun. And anything that's used, not cooked on a fire, but anything that's, let's say, used in an oven, or if there's no water in between, so that has that would require libun. Two kinds of libun kal and libun chamor, generally require libun chamor, unless we're talking about kind of with Pesach, there are considerations that would allow libun kal of. And again, that's the difference between, for Pesach, that's the difference between kashering your oven with self-cleaning and non-self-cleaning, right? So if you just put your oven at 500, so that's actually not libun chamor, that's libun kal. But maybe there's room to allow that because the chametz, first of all, is if you use a cleaning agent, it's destroyed, but also it's, you know, it was permitted substance when it was used. But with that said, people who have self-cleaning option, the self-cleaning oven option, so that might be preferred because that would be considered libun chamor. Okay. Any final points or questions?
Yeah. If you're using the self-cleaning oven, this is how many hours do you have to have it on self-cleaning?
For the oven. I remember. Isn't it its own process? Like, doesn't it just run
it's a cycle, time? Isn't it?
Well, you can set. I don't remember.
No. I think it's
a 4.5-hour cycle. It's a 4.5-hour cycle.
No, not all of them are 4.5 hours.
Yes.
I can't imagine that you would really have to, that you're halakhically required to go through the whole 4.5-hour cycle. I would think that half hour and hour should be enough to do the job, but.
Okay, no, just because my oven always breaks every year.
Right. You have to be careful also, it could break the oven. So if you could turn it off early, halakhically permitted, then it might be good.
Ooh. What's he saying?
He said that one time there, his nephew had had food in the oven and went a self clean by accident and exploded. Any final questions before we get kicked off in lesson 67?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much, Rabbi.
Thank you.
Okay, if you have any general Pesach questions, please email them to me by Thursday. I will answer them on Shabbos and Mirtz Hashem, and we'll continue with Hechsher Kalim next week.
Good night.
Good night.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Everybody.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye. Take care.